The reason we need to get to zero is simple. Greenhouse gases trap heat, causing the average surface temperature of the Earth to go up. The more gases there are, the more the temperature rises. And once greenhouse gases are in the atmosphere, they stay there for a very long time. Something like 1/5 of the carbon dioxide emitted today will still be there in 10,000 years. There's no scenario in which we keep adding carbon to the atmosphere and the world stops getting hotter. And the hotter it gets, the harder it will be for humans to survive, much less thrive. We don't know exactly how much harm will be caused by a given rise in the temperature, but we have every reason to worry. And because greenhouse gases remain in the atmosphere for so long, the planet will stay warm for a long time, even after we get to zero. Admittedly, I'm using zero imprecisely, and I should be clear about what I mean. In pre-industrial times, before the mid-18th century or so, the Earth's carbon cycle was probably roughly in balance. That is, plants and other things absorbed about as much carbon dioxide as was emitted. But then we started burning fossil fuels. These fuels are made of carbon that stored underground thanks to plants that died eons ago and got compressed over millions of years into oil, coal, or natural gas. When we dig up those fuels and burn them, we emit extra carbon and add to the total amount in the atmosphere. There are no realistic paths to zero that involve abandoning these fuels completely or stopping all the other activities that also produce greenhouse gases, like making cement, using fertilizer, or letting methane leak out of natural gas power plants. Instead, in all likelihood, in a zero-carbon future, we will still be producing some emissions, but we'll have ways to remove the carbon they emit. In other words, getting to zero doesn't actually mean zero. It means near net zero. It's not a pass-fail exam where everything's great if we get a 100% reduction and everything's a disaster if we only get a 99% reduction. But the bigger the reduction, the bigger the benefit. A 50% drop in emissions wouldn't stop the rise in temperature. It would only slow things down, somewhat postponing, but not preventing, a climate catastrophe. And suppose we reach a 99% reduction. Which countries and sectors of the economy would get to use the remaining 1%? How would we even decide something like that? In fact, to avoid the worst climate scenarios, at some point, we'll not only need to stop adding more gases, but actually need to start removing some of the gases we have already emitted. You may see this step referred to as net negative emissions. It just means that eventually we'll need to take more greenhouse gases out of the atmosphere than we put in so that we can limit the temperature increase. To return to the bathtub analogy from the introduction, we won't just shut off the flow of water into the tub. We'll open up the drain and let water flow out, too. I suspect that this chapter will not be the first place you'll have read about the risks of failing to get to zero. After all, climate change is in the news just about every day, as it should be. It's an urgent problem, and it deserves every headline it gets. But the coverage can be confusing and even contradictory. In this book, I'll try to cut through the noise. Over the years, I've had the chance to learn from some of the world's top climate and energy scientists. It's a never-ending conversation because researchers' understanding of the climate is always advancing as they incorporate new data and improve the computer models they use to forecast different scenarios. But I've found it enormously helpful in sorting out what's likely from what's possible but not probable, and it has convinced me that the only way to avoid disastrous outcomes is to get to zero. In this chapter, I want to share some of what I've learned.